Well, hi, everybody. Thank you for jumping on this week. It's so good to see you. Well, not quite see you yet, but it is such a pleasure to be here speaking with you. Thank you for the privilege of being in your home or in your earbuds while you're at the gym or driving in the car, wherever you are. Hey, that rhymes. But guys, it is fantastic to have you here. And I am having a conversation with the ever loving queen of C3 SYD, Mrs. Christine Pringle, my wife of nearly 50 years.
No way.
Here she is.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So before we just get underway, let me remind you that this is the C3 Church Global podcast, and you can subscribe so that you get this every week in your inbox. And any of the podcasts you can re-listen to, and they're worth re-listening to. Sometimes I'm listening to a podcast, I want to take out a pencil, but I'm on my bicycle and I'm listening to it through my ears, and so it's challenging. But these can be really good to use as maybe in a connect group, maybe with a group of people around you, just to listen to it, or else, as I say, in the car, at the gym, whenever you are needing to have input into your life for all the output that you're doing. Welcome, Chris.
Nice.
Great to have you here.
It's good to be here. Good to be anywhere.
At our age. Yeah, well, we're getting on. We'll soon have sevens in front of our age.
Oh, yes. Well, we've already got the seniors card, much to your...
My disgust.
Yes, but we did...
I resisted for 8 years.
Yes.
Eight and a half years.
And I'm not quite sure why we ended up getting them, but for our anniversary, we went into the city and we went to the movies and we were shocked at how cheap it was.
We just flicked out the seniors card.
You felt a bit guilty, but I felt liberated.
I did feel guilty. It's the same feeling you get when you go to a restaurant using a voucher.
That's true.
You know, that somebody gives you a voucher to go eat at a restaurant.
Yeah, posh restaurant. You know.
They think, let's give them a $200 voucher, and then you can go and eat at this posh restaurant, and you think, wow, that should cover everything, and you end up having to pay another $100 or something.
But you do feel weird because you get to the register and there's the girl and the guy, they're looking like, you know, $1 million. Thank you, Mr. Pringle, Mrs. Pringle. And we go, oh, we've got a voucher.
You feel like they're looking down their nose.
But it's actually paying forward.
Oh, totally.
You've paid forward.
It's voucher country.
Why should we feel guilty at nearly 70?
And sometimes if you've got a few of those cards, like at Christmas, $100 voucher cards, and you go into a place and it's going to cost you $450, whatever you're buying or something.
Yeah.
And so you've got to go through this long, and the scratch, get the number. And you know.
And that's where those people behind the counter are either for you or against you. Some are like, oh, no, this is fine.
Yeah.
No worries. Oh, how fortunate are you?
Yes.
You know, $500
exactly.
of vouchers. And that fabulous top ended up costing you like $30.
Yeah,
you feel so great.
I know. Yeah, I know. So. But then, like you say, the other kind... That's looking down their nose at vouchers.
You haven't even scraped the the rolling of the eyes. But
anyway, these are unusual little things that happen to people with senior cards. And
we haven't used it since.
No.
Not since August,
really. Yeah, well, we haven't. The movies have been shut down. Everything's.
Yeah, and every good movie is on your television.
On your television. So I guess we could ride the bus, Chris.
We could ride the bus.
Come on.
In fact, somebody did actually say,
we need to do that.
Or catch that big, the big yellow bus.
The B-line.
To Manly. And then get
the ferry.
Yeah, which is also reduced.
Yeah, it might cost us $5 for a day out.
And then just catch your Uber to the art gallery.
Yeah. I wonder if you get senior cars on Uber.
I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Ooh, this is exciting. Anyway. All the young people are like, oh, my gosh, what are those two?
Rolling back, sweetheart, to 1971.
Whoa, yes.
I was 19, you were 18.
Yep. A most amazing year.
We walked into a little Assembly of God church in Sydenham, Christchurch.
Mm-hmm.
And the preacher, I'd never seen anything like it. But anyway, our first words were when we walked in, I think I said to you, good vibes, babe.
Yeah, the atmosphere was just buzzing with with good vibes. That's why you said it.
Yeah, and it felt, yeah, because we were those kind of people. We're atmosphere people.
Yeah, we're into vibes. We knew what bad vibes were. And we'd been like actually trying to fight our way out of bad vibes.
Right.
And that kind of got us to that little church.
Exactly.
And yeah, you said good vibes, babe. And then in my heart, I said, I don't know why I said it. I just said, I'm home.
Right. Yeah, it was a weird thing.
Yeah.
I felt exactly the same thing, but I felt like and I said this to the pastor, I feel like a sheep that has found the sheepfold or, you know, the farm that's meant to be on. And
that's
obviously,
amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we both grew up in a small town, a pastoral town, Masterton.
Right.
You worked on farms,
right.
And I had uncles that had sheep and cows and everything. So what an analogy. You didn't even know it was biblical.
I know.
I mean,
60 million sheep in New Zealand, 3 million people.
Uh-huh. You're going to bump into a sheep.
You're going to bump into a sheep.
There's got to be some project that you do about the sheep in New Zealand. I remember doing one.
Oh, yeah, I totally.
Oh,
yeah, you had to do one.
Yeah,
you had to know about
the
sheep.
It was all about New Zealand agriculture and stuff here. So that night was a big turning point.
Big turning point. Giving our life to Jesus.
Yep.
Getting filled with the Holy Spirit.
Yep.
Getting set free from the past and dark forces and finding our way into just revival. It was the Jesus Revolution days.
Yeah.
We got married was 3 weeks after?
Yeah, it was 3 weeks. It was crazy. We went to see the pastor that next week and said, oh, we weren't feeling really cool
comfortable
about living together because we were living together. And he had the big Bible and then that tiny little vestry. He was so sweet, vestry, whatever that little room is.
Yeah.
And Pastor Barton said, oh, well, you know, I suggest that you part and consider
and
in the future getting married. And then what did you say?
My proposal was possibly the most romantic in the history of proposals, probably the most planned and prepared and invested in.
Mm-hmm.
I turned to you and I said, what about it, babe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the proposal. No ring, nothing, no on my knee.
No.
Yeah, but
you wouldn't have fitted on your knee in that little room. We were huddled in there.
I'm sorry.
I must have said yes.
Right here, right on this podcast. I don't think I've ever apologized for that. But
hey, I don't think you, because it's
our
story.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no need to apologize because everybody has their story. Like young people today, the plan, the engagement is like they plan it. There's the helicopter.
I know.
Or the ring drops out of the champagne.
I always really hope that, number one, the people, they're not going to start their marriage with debt.
Right.
A lot of debt because they spend so much on that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Two, that the marriage lasts because it's not about a wedding; it's about a marriage.
Yeah, right. And the purpose of a marriage, because if we hadn't have come to Christ that night, babe, like a lot of our friends who didn't, why would you get married?
Right.
And of course, that is
there
the question today. Couples that live together. Well, we're already a couple. A piece of paper doesn't make any difference. But for us, it was a moral decision to follow Christ. We're not to live together anymore. Nobody ever said to us, babe, it's wrong. Do you remember that?
No.
It was just written in our hearts that
night
that we asked Christ into it. We felt uncomfortable. We didn't feel right. And we were just inwardly convicted.
And
that's how we started.
That's the sign of being born again, I think, that you have an internal counselor.
Yes.
In fact, I had a lot of objections to Christianity.
Oh,
I was almost disappointed when I discovered that God was the God of the Christians because I didn't like the Christians and
saw
the hypocrisy.
They?
But then when I met the believers, the true, you know, like real, real filled with the Spirit Christians, I just loved those people.
Yeah.
And they were not like us at all.
No.
They were like on a different planet culturally.
Or
from the Boer War.
Yeah, and Scottish and English couples that had loved the Lord. Many of them had come to Christ during the Smith Wigglesworth days.
Yeah.
Which, hey.
Exactly. But the commonality was Jesus.
Oh.
And that.
We just loved
that. That bonded us. And I remember saying
us.
To the first thing I said that night that I came to Jesus, to the guy who was getting my details, I said, what about the Buddhists? What about the... He said, don't worry about that. Jesus will talk to you about those sorts of things. He didn't allow an argument to develop that was going to just put me into a bad state of mind.
Yeah.
He just let it ride. And then all the things that we gave up, nobody told us to, and we gave up a lot.
No. I remember we went home that night, and it was a Sunday night, obviously, and everyone was stoned and the fire was going because it was August 1971. And I remember coming into the kitchen area, and one of our flatmates, who I actually was a great friend, he looked at me with disdain and said, "I suppose you're one of those Jesus freaks now." Phil, I didn't even know I was a Jesus freak. I went into the bathroom and looked in the mirror to see if I looked different. I didn't look any different. But there was a immediate, we were different.
Yeah.
And then he was like, "Oh, you know, come into the lounge and smoke some dope." It was like, "Oh, I don't feel like it." There was the second cut.
And we lost all our friends.
Oh, we lost all our friends. And Lordy.
Yeah, we actually left that house. And we started a big new one after we got married.
Yes.
And we got all these beautiful wedding presents from the church.
Oh, it was sensational. We were loved.
And I think we broke every plate, everything that we had in the next year because we took all these off-the-street people, criminals coming out of jail, misfits and drug addicts, all kinds of people.
Like petty crime people who the courts couldn't be bothered with.
Right.
And somehow, maybe through the church, they heard, "Oh, there's this house and this, these young couples, help these kids, you know, get them off our books." Mm-hmm. And but we had amazing... That was an amazing year.
We got robbed so many times.
we were so naive. Remember, we read the New Testament that they... had everything in common, and so we had a jar,
It
was like, whatever you have, put in the jar, and whatever need you have, take it out.
Yeah,
and so we heroin addicts were like, "Empty the jar. I'm just going down to the shop to get an apple." what they were doing is going
you
to
see
get
them
hurt.
4 days later. Yeah,
in the gutter.
Oh, they were.
You know?
Yeah, but we did see about maybe 1,000 people come to Jesus in that place. It was amazing days of revival. Yeah. So many stories. Yeah,
it was kind of
phenomenal.
Our baptism into early marriage and ministry.
Totally.
Although we didn't really understand.
I'm not sure the two go well together.
No, there's... it's
because when we finally left that house and we were on our own, because you had our first daughter.
Yeah, Rebecca was a baby.
We were in Paparoa Street.
Yeah, that little flat.
That little flat. And it felt so weird because there was only you and me.
Yeah.
And we had to get used to the idea that, Flip, we're going to be alone together with our children as they come along.
Raising a family. It was very different.
Because we'd been in this house full of people and revival and prayer meetings and praise and worship. And we kind of didn't even know each other until we actually ended up in.
Yeah.
And that had started a process of getting to know each other, which we.
Which never ends, does
never
it?
Never ends.
Every season you.
Yeah,
either
you become
you
different people.
Or I are different, and you have to adapt, you know,
you
to one another. Adapt, like we're watching that program, that David Attenborough thing about the no, it wasn't a David Attenborough.
No, the octopus. Learning from the octopus.
Yeah, and this man's filming this octopus, and that little creature, she had to adapt to the colour that she was hiding in or living in.
Yeah.
And she was bright orange or green or white
incredible.
With speckles. And that's a bit like adapting in marriage and ministry through the decades, which we've had to do through trials, through the joys, through the losses and the disappointments, and you have to adapt.
Let's talk about that because I don't think we were well equipped for the pressure.
Not
that
at all.
Came because we went into, I was made a youth leader and then I was an assistant pastor in the period of about 2 years, 3 years.
Yep.
And then in when I was 25, we moved. So that was just like 5 years after getting born again.
Yeah.
We moved out to Littleton to start a church.
Yes, yes, yes.
And suddenly the pressure of getting a message ready, developing a team, holding services, all of that. We were so untrained and
novices.
Didn't really have any idea what we were doing. And we had children.
Yeah, and we didn't really have any mentors, babe. Like, I'm thinking, who did you call?
Well, they
call?
Did from a distance.
From
Our pastor
a distance.
Did
yes,
from a distance
yes,
and another pastor in another church, Pete Morrow. But it wasn't like it is today where you have... You want close mentors in your world and you you are quite happy for instruction and teaching.
You had we had to create that group around us, those friends that became our co-workers and mentors. And from Littleton, well, I mean, we were there for 3 years.
Yeah.
And we saw many salvations, but it was a tiny, it was many salvations that were important, like people whose lives were changed.
Incredible.
And then we... Then you went to India.
After 2 years of there, we went. I went to India, and in that process, the Lord had been speaking to us, and we had had a couple of attempts at getting to Sydney.
Yeah.
But that all failed. It was without going into a long story about it, but they were terrible. Mm-hmm. And then when I flew to India, the Lord said, "Now's the time for Sydney," and I was so upset with God. I said, "Look, when I wanted to go, you were not into it." And now I'm quite happy, and I do not want ever to think about Sydney ever again.
We thought we'll be now you want me to go forever.
And so I, you know, I thought okay, but I'd got felt like I'd been broken over that whole thing, and it felt like the seed of Sydney as a vision had died.
Yep,
it had gone into the ground. We'd both given it up. Yep. We both had had a heart for it at one stage.
Yeah,
but now it had died.
Yeah,
and that is the nature of a vision.
Yep.
That is the nature of a seed. Unless it does die, it's never actually going to bring forth fruit.
That is so true. And so you were in India and I was in Littleton moving into our newly built pole house with two little kids and no communication.
$26,000 that cost us to build that pole house.
And I just thought, oh, wow, this is awesome. And then you got home from India and after you'd given out the gifts to the kids and the big, you know, copper pot to me.
Oh, that's right.
I knew you were itching to say something. And in the bottom of my stomach, I had this feeling, no. And sure enough, the Lord spoke to me about, you said to me, the Lord's spoken to me, me again about Sydney. And we sought God, and then we went to see our pastor. We waited a year. We were so freaked out that we were like, we're not saying anything. We're just sit on it. And it was during that year that we'd go through the tunnel on a Thursday night. We had a training college student living with us and she looked after the kids.
Yeah.
And there, that's where, you know, that wonderful moment happened where you drew the dream. And of course, we're only dreaming. So you dreamed
of what would happen in Sydney.
Yeah.
And pretty much, you know, this building and the site that we're on today in Oxford Falls in Sydney. And this story, I talk about it in the book I first wrote on, which is Faith, and talk a bit about it in You, the Leader as well.
Yeah.
If you go to philpringle.com or to Amazon, you can download or get a Kindle edition or an ebook edition of any of my books that we've written over the years. And Chris, who has written a book on Jesse, which is to do with child loss. And so please.
I'm working on another one, trust me.
And so as we went through that experience, we landed in Sydney, and they were some of the most difficult days we'd ever had because we'd come to plant a church. We had $1,600 in the bank. We had no funding or sending church.
No.
We had nobody that we knew who was going to turn up. We had one family with us, Simon and Helen McIntyre and their children.
That's so true. And they came with us on their own back because we were so freaked out. And you said to Simon and Helly, hey, first of all, I don't want you to come. But if you do come, it's on you. I can't promise you anything.
The reason I didn't want them to come was not because I didn't want them. I loved them, wanted them to come, but because I couldn't offer them anything.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, and so
we did love them. We adored them.
So they came, and I was very happy they came because we ended up sleeping on their living room floor when we were trying to get our church going, and we had stumblings and failings, and I in my head was just filled with doubt.
Yes, that's true.
Every little step I took, I remember buying an overhead projector. That's how old we are, and that's how
1980.
That's
when
we were starting church, starting a church with an overhead projector, a few slides, and an acoustic guitar that I would play, and Chris would be the song leader, and
Simon would have the little bucket for the offering.
Exactly, and strangely enough, in the midst of all this terrible. People leaving us, accusing us of things, all kinds of things going on. Amazingly, that church suddenly started to grow.
Yes. Yeah.
And it got up to nearly 400 people in the first year, which was utterly astonishing for us in 1980. I was looking for a church of maybe 500 people, but suddenly
that was the big dream.
Yeah.
Oh, 500.
And then we
congregation
took on a property, and we took on the Thu Parade.
Yep.
And revival happened there in so many ways.
Oh, that was
we started a
awesome
Bible college
season.
We started a TV ministry, a creative arts ministry. We just felt God tell us, and the biggest commission we got from the Lord at that time was to plant 10 churches in 10 major cities around the world. And I thought, well, that's going to take a lifetime.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, dear God, planting one church has nearly killed me. He wants to kill me 10 times. And so then the pressure on you and me, I think we didn't anticipate how much that would take a toll on us. And I don't think I think we underestimated how much we were a target.
You're wondering where he's going with this.
No, we were a target for the devil.
We were, and
our family was.
Oh Lord, and thank God. Like I feel like through every season, at the start of every part of the ministry, God sent to us incredible couples and individuals to be alongside us and to help us.
Yeah,
who actually became the ones too that helped us get through our difficulties in marriage and in parenting, and without our friends, like, you know, we weren't alone anymore. We realized that we couldn't do this by ourselves. And I, you know, thank God for the couples that have stuck with us.
Yeah.
And some have gone.
That is so important you never want to see the ministry as a profession.
Right.
We're not professionals. We're amateurs. And I want to stay an amateur my whole life because the word amateur comes from to love. The French word, amour. And so they do it because they love it. Whereas a professional is doing it because the money's good.
Yeah.
And I think money can steal your heart from the willing spirit that you have to do the ministry because you love God.
Mm-hmm.
And you love the people and you love the church. And to stay in that zone, I think to make sure that your team have the same spirit.
Yeah.
You have to commit to each other as friends, not just as co-workers or just as professional ministers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so our friends, we've been friends with all of our team for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
Like you say.
Yeah. And even before, like when I think of Simon and Helly.
So that's 50 years.
The late Helly. Mm. They would come over to us, our worship service in Lyttelton. Mm. And that was how the seed for Sydney got into Simon and Helly.
And coming here with us.
Yeah. It was a new seed. It wasn't the seed. That seed had died, but this new seed for Sydney was different and it was scarier. It was scary seed.
And it's so important that the friendship is more important than the titles and the roles because someone like Simon or Mark Kelsey or Greg French or any of our friends, Mark Saundercock, all of these guys have been quite okay about taking any role at all.
Yes, that's been wonderful.
Which has been incredible. Mm-hmm. But coming back to us, the family, the kids, you know, just I would think that we really need to be able to raise up in this hour families with some of the understanding from the experiences we've had that you really need to look after your kids.
Yeah.
Need to put a hedge around them.
Yeah.
What we did, because the ministry is kind of weird, you have Mondays off.
Yes.
And your kids are at school and nobody else has got the day off in the community. And then you're working on Sunday when everybody's down the beach. So your kids are sort of, they're with you at work.
Yeah.
And it's a little unusual like that. Mm-hmm. So they already are feeling a little odd. Mm. And then at school they find out, what, your father's the pastor, you know, and they're going to have, you know, cynical views.
It can be tough on the kids. It was tough on our kids. I think as pioneers it was tough and we were learning parenting as much as we were learning marriage and ministry.
Which was also difficult because both of us came from reasonably difficult backgrounds.
Yeah, so sorry, kids, sorry. but here's the upside of that. Now that our children are older and, you know, they've gotten through the teenage years and their own trials and their own moments of actual encounter of salvation.
And they're amazing, amazing
now
children.
Now they see, oh my gosh, they do remember the sacrifices and they're thankful.
And the investments that we made. Because,
but we would help, we would definitely say, as you said, I would concur 100%, that don't sacrifice your family and your marriage for the ministry.
Right.
Work together, like, you know.
It doesn't have to be that way.
That's right. You can do it better.
Right. The friendship factor, like you said. If you've got your own little community, never think that as a minister you can't have friends.
Oh.
You got to have friends.
Yeah.
And you got to have a support group that you can bleed with when you're going through trouble.
Uh-huh.
And in that friendship, if they can understand how to maintain respect without getting too familiar, and the structure remains strong, I think that argues for a really good future. Yeah. But then in that family community, I think the children find that they're helped and looked after too.
Oh, definitely. But, I mean, our kids would say, you know, like even Joe would say now, the late Hallie, she was like my second mum, and Auntie Julie, that's Julie French, she's like a mum to me. So this is them now with families of their own are remembering back to their childhood.
Yes.
And we would all gather like on a Sunday night at home, especially throughout the summer, swimming, and they would be, we'd put the kids to bed up the passageway.
We'd all be laughing, eating pizza.
And they remember it.
Yes.
They were like, oh, the
house full of laughter.
And they want to actually
do
reproduce that. They have people to their homes,
are
hospitable. They have,
I think their greatest memories are the holidays we had.
Oh, yeah.
We would always make sure we were, for many years, we'd go out. We'd hire boats or we'd use boats or for a little while we actually had a boat.
Yeah, we had that tiny little boat.
And 19.
We'd go out and sleep on it for...
So we'd stay out there for 10 days.
Yeah.
All cramped up and, you know, but it was so much fun.
I loved it.
So the holidays on Pittwater, the holidays up at the, you know, Tweed Heads, Rainbow Bay.
Taking them skiing, driving
holiday
all
skiing,
night.
Driving all night to go to the mountains. After our Sunday services, we'd finish and go down for a few days. And and then, you know, they're the stories we tell around the table.
Yeah.
And so that relieved the pressure somewhat, but definitely coping with pressure, I would say, is the most challenging thing from my point of view.
Yeah.
In when you're married, you've got when you own a house, you got a mortgage. When you got to get your messages ready, you're distracted at home. You got to have boundaries so that you know that there are areas in your house that you don't work, and there's times when you are not available to anybody else but your family.
Yeah.
And there are times vice versa that your family must understand that you have, in those other times and areas,
you're giving
priorities
working
elsewhere. Mm. And so it is like figuring that out, letting everybody know. But even with the greatest management and the greatest boundaries, Henry Cloud has great books on boundaries for leaders, et cetera. Mm. And even with the greatest, that's not going to make the pressure evaporate.
Yeah.
So becoming emotionally resilient and mentally strong is important for marriage to stay alive and not allow those pressures to come into what you're all about as a couple.
Mm. Brilliant.
Well, we're getting to a close, Chris. Sorry, I was just getting that big thought out.
Right. I thought he was going to go into preaching.
Yeah, I was just about
there.
But give us some final thoughts, Chrissy.
Well, I guess, you know, as we, we're this year, this 2020 year, as a church and as a couple, as a family, we're celebrating 40 years here in Sydney. And next year we head into half a century being married. I think that, you know, we've got to, through all the pressures and all the difficulties, we are so thankful to God that we have survived.
Yeah.
We're survivors.
Yeah.
And we will continue to be
survivors.
And
that is the Lord.
And that is the Lord, because really when I think about it, our marriage has been bound by purpose which has been to serve the Lord. It's not every marriage.
That's a really great phrase. Marriage is bound by purpose.
Ours has been. It's not everyone's call. And sometimes, you know, you can look at, you know, a couple who are like, oh, yeah, we're going away for the long weekend. Oh, where are you going? Oh, out on, you know, whatever, Sydney Harbour. We're like, oh, great. Praise God. What are you doing? Oh, what did you do over the weekend? Oh, we had church and
10 services.
Fellowship and, yeah. and everything.
And loved every minute.
Yeah, but I guess it's embracing the purpose of marriage. And I seriously, babe, I do see couples that have everything in their marriage, but they don't have a common purpose.
Common purpose is so important.
Common purpose.
Looking in the same direction, not just looking into each other's eyes.
Yeah, so I'm
so
like,
important.
Through it all, yeah, we've had tough times and we've even preached about it, you know, half our marriage has been crap and the other half of our marriage has been okay. But what has bound us together, it's not everybody's story. Some people have in the ministry have perfect families
troubles.
You know, never had an argument and never slammed the door or slept in the other room. Well, that's not our story.
Right.
And that might encourage
but
some.
But that qualifies us to talk about it.
That might shock a few. Well, too bad. Yeah. This is our story. And, you know, we're still here to tell it together as a couple and loving the Lord and so thankful for the call of God that has carried us.
It has carried us. It is. It's carried us
carried
all the way.
The
call of God has carried us, and like just folks, as we close up today, I would say this about just regarding marriage: you've got to accept that there will be rough waters. When Jesus said to the disciples, "Get in the boat, we're going to the other side," they did not know there was going to be a storm in the middle of the lake, and they would encounter rough waters. Yeah. And I find in so many situations, in leaders, in marriages, that people are not prepared to actually ride the rough waters. It's called having emotional resilience. I mean, parents won't even tell their children off because they know it's going to create such a reaction. But you got to go through those rough waters and endure the reaction, talk it through, get to the other side, because you got to get to the other side. But if we just never allow ourselves to move into moments of conflict or confrontation, and ride those rough waters, we actually won't get to the other side of growth, of where we're trying to get to. And I think that's part of a leader's job with his team. There's going to be moments where it's rough waters. When you are making big decisions with your family, you know. But actually, as you ride those, you'll develop emotional strength. And you'll also get to your destination. Don't expect a smooth ride all the way, people.
And I'm thankful to God that my husband's a skipper. So when we do, I mean, he's an actual yachtsman skipper. And we have experienced in the natural on the waters, like
very,
a perfect day.
Very rough.
And then, you know, anchor held, ropes to the shore. And at 2 a.m. up comes that wind.
Boom.
And like the ropes snap. And I've got to stay on the boat and he's got to go to shore. That's where it is. I'm just thinking of that time in that bay.
Yeah, I know.
When I'm like, oh my gosh, if the anchor doesn't hold, where's the boat going to end up on the rocks with Phil? Because you'd gone in on the dinghy.
I had to get the other rope off.
Yeah, and I'm like, but we made it.
Yeah.
And we actually just, the anchor hurled, we pulled it up, we came out of that little bay safe. But that was a great illustration of us working together in rough waters.
Yeah, totally.
That is how we roll.
Yeah, well, we were side onto those
that
waters.
Is how we
and
roll.
So we were going sideways.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, we were rocking and rolling.
Oh,
so we just had to
scary.
Swing around to get head straight up into that wind. So like you say, it's
that was the night watch.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to have the night watch.
Yeah, we were the night watch too. But anyway, people, that's a little bit of our story. We could talk for a lot longer, but we're not going to. It's been great having you with us today. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button, rate us, review us, tell us how we're doing, and leave a comment so that we can do better. And and trust, if you've got any comments, like how long these podcasts are, you'd like them shorter, like them longer, what you'd like us to talk about.
Yeah, they might have questions.
Yeah. So we'd love to hear from you and look forward to talking with you next week on Wednesday when we post it live sometime around midday. See you
That's
then.
Awesome.